Are you enjoying this free audiobook from Scribble.com? You may not know that Scribble has much more than just free audiobooks. Audiobooks, ebooks, we're adding new titles all the time. You can skip these ads and get higher quality audio files by purchasing audiobooks on Scribble. Even better, every audiobook you buy from Scribble comes with the ebook at no additional charge. Visit us at Scribble.com. That's Scribble.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome to the serialized short story audiobook collection, Bones Are White, by Scott Sigler. Get the stories in Bones Are White for all ebook readers at scottsigler.com/bonesarewhite, or from that same page as a full-length audiobook. You can also buy the ebook version directly from the Kindle Store, the Nook Store, Apple's iBooks, and from Google Play. This book contains harsh language, adult situations, and lots of violence. So if you're easily offended, cue up some Taylor Swift and enjoy.
Gunfire still echoed through the forest, but now only in faraway spurts. Marcus rolled onto his back. His chest felt like someone had pounded in a huge nail with a huge hammer, banging away until the rusty, dull point forced its way through. It also burned. He was alive. Yet, how could that be? He'd seen the blood pouring out of his chest. Maybe he'd injected himself with nanomeds, but even if he had, the tiny machines couldn't repair a punctured heart. Shy of a full OR, nothing could repair a punctured heart. He put his hand to his chest. It still felt wet. He held his hand up to look at it. Blood, of course. His bloody hand silhouetted against the early afternoon sun. But not just blood. Glitter. His bloody fingers sparkled in the sun. He rolled to his knees and immediately searched for his rifle. The L-62 also had a hole through it. Useless. He tossed it aside, drew his sidearm, and stood on shaky legs. The sound of the powerful AOV engines filled the sky. Those sounded like the Big Daddies, not the 10-person jobs used by recon squads, but rather 100-unit landing ships that dropped in an entire company of infantry. From the sound of it, the whole fucking brigade was inbound. At least 10 companies, 1,000 Marines. They could clean up this mess of cannibalistic E-troopers, then evac Marcus and whatever bulldogs were left right off this fucking planet. "Bulldogs, report," Marcus said. "Psycho here. Killing red suits at will." Psycho was a long ways off to the right. Marcus didn't need to worry about him.
"Cheryl here, with Crossler. Both fine."
She was also a long ways off, but to his left.
"Sforza here. Philly is gone."
"Are you sure?"
The crazy thought flashed through Marcus's mind.
"Are you sure he's dead?
Because after Jennings, the motherfucker shot me." Marcus blinked. His leg. He'd taken a round. His hands flew to his thigh. Fabric soaked in blood, peppered with dirt and plant bits from the forest floor. He found the bullet hole and put his finger through it to search inside. Smooth skin. No entry wound. "Marcus, are you okay?" Cheryl's voice in the J-plant.
Affirmative. I'm fine."
He was fine. But how could he be fine? He'd been shot in the leg. Not just that. He'd had a hole in his heart. He'd seen dozens of wounds like that in his 3 tours. Even if a medevac had been right there, it wouldn't have mattered. Getting shot in the heart killed you dead. The glitter. What the fuck was that glitter? That shit was in Kirschman's blood,
Kirschman, who had fired on his own troops.
Force, Marcus said. Check Philly again. Is he dead?
Is there some other kind?
Maybe there was some other kind. Philly has no pulse?
Philly has no guts, Sforza said. No guts, no pulse, eyes wide and glazed over. Think that counts, boss?
Yeah, Marcus said. Yeah, sure. But did it count? Bulldogs, stay melted. Full brigade is landing. Stay hidden until you have visual and verbal confirmation of 107th regulars.
We have to keep moving, Sarge, Cheryl said. The zone is crawling with E-troopers. And what about Jennings? He fired on you. We can't trust anyone.
Jennings fired on you?
Crossler. He sounded ragged, like he'd come close to death himself.
What the fuck, man? Is this E-trooper shit contagious?
Marcus shook his head violently. No, it wasn't contagious. Couldn't be. That was just too fucked up for words. Jennings's leg. Your heart. He couldn't think about that now. He had to get his people out of there. Keep moving, he said. Everyone, track south. Make some distance and make it fast. Cheryl, you and Crossler can stay together. Everyone, do whatever you've got to do to stay alive. Dimya?
Aye, aye,
Cheryl and Crossler said together.
Aye, aye,
Sforza said.
Sarge, Psycho said, request permission to continue killing. These guys are slow and stupid. I think I can break the battalion record.
The record. Psycho was going for 21 kills in a day.
How many you got so far?
Sforza asked, excitement in his voice. A desperate excitement, as if Sforza needed something, anything, to take his mind off the slaughter, the loss of his friends.
16, Psycho said. I'm on a motherfucking roll, bitches.
Jesus, Crossler said.
Hey, Psycho, maybe you shouldn't get so excited about killing our own troops.
Fuck that, Cheryl said. Take them out, Psycho.
The mini-debate froze Marcus. Kill them? Don't kill them? Was he one of them now? His stomach rumbled, loudly. High One, please, not one of them. He tapped a pattern on his jaw. Fleet, this is Recon 6.
Recon 6, go ahead.
Sit rep. 4 casualties. 5 troopers active, inflicting heavy damage on the enemy. We're separated, incapable of cohesive unit action. Repeat. Incapable of cohesive unit action. We're in survival mode. The enemy is clearly E-troopers from the 15th OEG.
Recon 6, you had direct contact with the enemy.
Affirmative.
Are you wounded? Did you suffer any wounds?
Marcus paused, a small, hopeless feeling blossoming in his chest. How long had the ocular uplink stayed on? What had Fleet seen?
Recon 6, I repeat, did you suffer any wounds?
Marcus didn't want them to know. Negative, he said.
Have you or your team injected any nanomeds?
Only for Trooper Philbrick, who's dead.
Recon 6, orders are to not use nanomeds, no matter what the condition of the wound, even in a life-threatening injury. I repeat, do not use nanomeds. Do you copy?
Don't use nanomeds, even if a soldier lay dying. The hopeless spot in Marcus's heart spread from his chest into his stomach, into his throat.
Recon 6, confirm the order.
Do not use nanomeds, Marcus said. Aye, aye, Fleet.
Recon 6, we read Private Jennings as active. Have you had or are you now in contact with him?
He fired upon us, Marcus said.
Treat him as hostile,
Fleet said. No shit, Sherlock.
Fleet, listen. I need intel. What the fuck is going on down here?
A pause. A long pause. In all of Marcus's 26 missions, he had never heard a long pause before.
Fleet used a near-sentient computer to map event probabilities. Decisions and alternates were stacked up 7 to 10 levels deep. Admirals or other commanders managed strategy from a deep sensory console, a graphical interface that fed them mathematical information in short bursts of programmer code. Everything went into that constantly fluctuating code. Troop strength, movement, enemy strength, ammo, supplies, reinforcement numbers and distance, weather, everything. The near sentience stacked up strategies and orders, logical building blocks designed to deliver the results desired by the Admiral. As soon as a decision was made, orders went out at the speed of light. So even in an ever-changing battlefield, strategy changes were ready to go. Order after order backed up and ready for thousands of contingencies. That was part of what made the Planetary Union such a deadly fighting force. Millions of units moved as one, instantly changing tactics and hitting like a single organism. Fleet never hesitated. Never. Until now.
Fleet, damn it! Give me intel! We're dying down here! You're telling me to let my people die instead of using nanomeds. Why?
Why? The one question a soldier was never supposed to ask. Well, fuck that. He'd watched Philly walk after the man said his leg was blown off. This wasn't war. This was a fucking horror fest.
Recon 6, Fleet said. The Malak base was working on a new kind of nanomed. We suspect that the nanomeds went rogue.
Went rogue? What the fuck does that mean?
The nanomeds may be causing aberrant behavior.
Aberrant? Is that what you call these motherfuckers eating each other?
You are to treat everyone as a potentially hostile. Recon 6, everyone but the 107th. When members of the 107th identify themselves, you are to immediately lay down your arms and allow yourself to be contained. Any sudden actions from you will be treated as hostile.
Lay down his arms? Were they joking?
What the fuck are you talking about?
Recon 6, you have your orders. Communicate those orders to your squad.
Fleet broke the connection. Marcus paused for only 3 seconds, then tapped his J-plant to talk to Psycho, Sforza, Cheryl, and Crossler. He automatically passed on the order, his training making him speak in a monotone, free of any emotional reaction or opinion. Marcus Crowley did as he was told, and then he told his people to do the same. Stay melted. Treat everyone as a hostile. When the 107th shows up, lay down your arms or you're dead. They all started to question the orders on that last one, but Marcus tapped his J-plan again, breaking the squad-level connection. He just didn't have any answers. Thirty minutes after his call to Fleet, a headache came on sudden and heavy. 1 minute nothing, the next, lead pipe to the skull thick. Marcus kept moving through the blue underbrush, a silent recon shade. His camo, the exact color and pattern of the plants around him. He fought through the headache, although he knew something was very, very wrong. What he couldn't fight through, however, was when his left leg suddenly stopped working. He fell, his concentration suddenly focused on keeping his sidearm out of the dirt and mud as he hit the ground. He holstered the weapon, then started massaging his leg. No Charlie horse. No numbness. He sat on his ass. He lifted his knee slowly to his chest, then extended it back out. And after a one-second pause, his leg repeated the motion. On its own. Marcus stared at his leg. He pushed it down to the ground and held it there. I gotta get help. That hopeless feeling clutched his every atom, sending tendrils of panic deep into his soul. His leg had moved on its own. He hadn't done it. He hadn't done it. He tapped his J-plant.
Recon 6, sound off.
Cheryl with Crossler, melted and A-OK. She sounded close.
Psycho here. 19 and counting.
A pause.
Sforza, Marcus said. Report in.
Another pause. Then Sforza answered.
Where are you, Marcus?
Marcus thought about the words of his squad mate. Did Sforza sound different?
Fors, you okay?
I'm fine, Marcus. Are you wounded?
Marcus shook his head again. Shook it several times, not in answer to the question, but rather to deny what his instinct told him. Sforza spoke again.
I'm here with Jennings, Marcus. Where are you?
Here with Jennings. Marcus felt a deep fear. Something even deeper than what he felt when the bullets flew or when an AOV took a hit. The J-plant's buzz told him that Sforza wasn't far away.
Squad, Sforza is compromised, Marcus said. Shoot him on sight. Jennings, too.
Roger that, Psycho said.
Cheryl's voice.
Marcus, are you sure about that?
Follow your fucking orders. Shoot him on sight. Radio silence from here out. Cheryl, don't move. I'm coming to your location.
Marcus tapped off his J-plant, tapped hard enough to leave a bruise. He held his head in both hands and rocked slowly forward, then back, then forward again. He was fucked. And he was hungry. He stood and started sprinting in the direction of Cheryl's voice. His left arm stopped working. No, that wasn't right. It worked just fine. It worked. He just wasn't the one controlling it. His left arm reached out into the air. It twisted. It punched. His fingers made a fist, then stretched out again. He grabbed his left hand with his right, tried to push his left arm to his side and hold it there. His breath came in short bursts. Out in, then hold. His arm was moving on its own. He hadn't signed up for this. No fucking way. His legs gave out again, both of them this time. He fell flat on his face, mud pushing into his mouth and nostrils. It tasted minty. He rolled to his back.
Somebody help me!
The blue plants ate up his screams. No echo.
Please, high one, somebody help me!
His right arm worked still. He reached out and grabbed a thick root. He pulled himself forward, sliding his body through the mud. The headache grew stronger, doubling in intensity. He felt a tingling at the base of his skull. Rogue nanomeds. Marcus grabbed another root, kept dragging himself forward. Muddy water soaked through his camo. Even on the arm and the legs he no longer controlled, he felt the cool wetness on his skin. The Planetary Union believed in two things, technology and education. Even in the military, he received regular classes on science and math. He knew the human body. It made perfect sense. A body moved
because of an electrochemical process. Nerve signals sent from the brain induced a sodium-potassium electrical reaction, a chain signal that instantly traveled through any part of the body and made muscles move. He reached out again. His right hand stopped grasping.
Please! Someone help me! I can't stop it!
Marcus wedged his elbow against another root and used it to drag himself forward one last time. If he could have looked behind himself, he would have seen the muddy trough through which he'd pulsed his body in a last-ditch effort to escape. The human body was just another machine, a biological machine, but a machine nonetheless. Most of the body's movements didn't even require conscious thought. You had to decide to draw your sidearm. Decide if you were ready to kill or not. You didn't need to think about the actual drawing of the weapon. You just did it. Automatic. Mechanized. His brain triggered that response, controlled it. What if something besides him triggered and controlled that response? The brain only started the process. The rest of it was hardware. If the correct signal was sent, his muscles would react accordingly. If that happened, something might drive his body, just as he would drive a car. Marcus tried to reach out one more time. His body wouldn't respond. His body moved. But Marcus Crowley wasn't driving anymore. He was just along for the ride. He was just a passenger. Marcus, Cheryl's voice. Not from the J-plant, from his ears. Marcus, where are you? He heard two people moving fast through the underbrush. Finally, someone was coming to help him. His stomach let out a rumble that was little less than a roar. Oh, no, he whispered. Marcus Crowley suddenly realized he'd wasted his last few moments of control. He shouldn't have pulled himself through the mud. What he should have done was draw his sidearm and eat a bullet. But it was too late for that. Like a marionette raised by a trembling, unsure hand, his body stood awkwardly. His right hand reached for his sidearm. He felt his fingers touch the metal handle, felt the cold, wet mud on the holster's leather. He felt these things as if someone had taken his hand and moved it for him. On the third try, he grabbed the handle firmly and pulled the sidearm from his holster. Marcus, hold on, we're coming. His body lurched toward Cheryl's voice. Just 10 feet away, Cheryl and Crossler broke from the blue underbrush. They stopped. They stared at him for only a second. Then they pointed their weapons into the surrounding woods, looking for an enemy. They didn't realize the enemy was right there with them.
Cheryl, run! Marcus screamed. Just run!
She turned back to look at him, the barrel of her sniper rifle automatically dipping down even as her eyes flashed a too late recognition. Marcus's right arm raised the gun and his fingers squeezed the trigger. The bullet tore through Cheryl's right shoulder, spinning her around. Her rifle flew out of her hands as she dropped to the ground. Marcus's body didn't have to turn, just pivot. Crossler's eyes went wide with fear and anger. Marcus's body tried to shoot, but Crossler was faster. He put 2 rounds into Marcus's chest. One bullet tore through his right lung. The other punched into his belly. The world swam before Marcus's eyes. His body, completely out of his control, fell to the ground. He wanted to tell Crossler to finish the job.
Marcus tried to talk, but he couldn't draw breath. Instead, Crossler ran to Cheryl. He slung his rifle and put pressure on her wound. She didn't scream, just grimaced. She looked like she'd bitten into a very sour lemon.
Crossler, you undisciplined fucker. Finish the job.
Marcus felt the pain directly. Maybe his nanomeds didn't. They didn't feel the pain any more than he would if his car had a flat tire or a dented door. His body sat up. His hand aimed the sidearm at Crossler's back and fired three times. Crossler screamed and fell forward. Cheryl's sour face stared at Marcus. Then she lurched to her feet and stumbled into the underbrush. Marcus felt something beyond the pain. He felt hunger. His mouth started to salivate, and he knew why. The nanomeds needed material for repairs. Marcus's body crawled toward Crossler. Crossler, his former friend, his former squad mate, rolled to his back. Chest heaving, body trembling, his eyes widened with horror as Marcus crawled through the mud on his hands and knees. Marcus thought of how Kirschman had begged for death.
Oh, please, no,
Marcus said as his hands reached out and yanked at Crossler's camo-patterned armor. Marcus, Crossler grunted. Don't do it. Please. Crossler's armor came off, exposing a bloody chest and stomach. Marcus wanted to close his eyes, but apparently he didn't control that anymore either. He didn't control anything. His head lowered to Crossler's neck. Crossler screamed. Marcus screamed, too, at least until his teeth sank into Crossler's throat. Marcus's head shook itself several times. He tasted something hot and wet. Then his head came away with a mouthful of hot flesh. Crossler stopped screaming. He made a gurgling noise instead. Marcus chewed. Someone please fucking kill me, please. High One, please kill me now. But no one killed him. His head lowered again for another bite. Marcus couldn't do anything to stop it. He couldn't do anything but watch. Watch and taste. Marcus, are you closing in? The last remnants of sanity clung to Marcus's thoughts, sickly forcing him to stay aware of the situation. His body fixed itself quickly, so quickly. Crossler's two bullets were long since repaired. Marcus's body followed a trail of blood. Cheryl's blood. He wasn't hungry anymore, nor would he be anytime soon. He had Crossler's right arm strapped to the webbing of his backpack. Marcus knew why his body wanted Cheryl. It wanted to convert her. The nanomeds were alive in a way. And like any living creature, they wanted to expand. They wanted to reproduce. No one was shooting at him anymore. When his body went over the ridge and tossed those two grenades, the troopers from the 107th must have lost him. Marcus heard his own voice talking. Cheryl, it said, you're going to die if you don't let me help you. She was close. He knew it. Somehow the nanomeds driving his body knew it too. He moved past an outcropping of rock, and there she was. Cheryl Everson was on her back. She was panting. She must have lost a lot of blood. Marcus remembered the times he'd lain with her, naked, sweaty, and laughing. A soldier knows any day might be his or her last, So when you fuck someone, boy or girl, you soak up every last nuance. He'd soaked up a lot of nuance with Cheryl. Marcus's hand holstered his sidearm. His body moved toward her.
"We will repair you," his voice said.
Her wide eyes blinked rapidly in fear. Marcus wanted to help her, but he couldn't. He couldn't do anything. He was just a passenger. A rustle from his right. His head turned to look. His eyes saw Psycho. Saw Psycho's L-62 aimed right at his head.
"Hey, Marcus," Psycho said. "You're number 22. Aren't you going to congratulate me?"
Perhaps the nanomeds had forgotten to turn off control to every part of Marcus's body because, at that moment, he smiled.
"Oh, thank you, High One."
Marcus's hand reached for his sidearm. Psycho pulled the trigger and, with Cheryl as his witness, landed his name in the record books.
Author's note for Passenger. Our brains make us who we are. It's hard to argue with that, no matter what your spiritual and/or scientific beliefs might be. We can live with just about any body part, at least for a little while. Dialysis machines can do the work of a kidney. A pig's heart can take the place of your own. You can get a liver from another donor when yours fails. You could live without your arms and legs, and so on and so on. So even if you believe in a soul, there's really no arguing where that soul resides. Cut off an arm, you're still you. Cut off your head, you're not. Transplant a kidney, you're still you. Transplant a brain, if and when we have the technology to do that, and you is wherever that brain lands. It's those donor organs that got me to thinking. Even if someone else's liver replaces yours, that liver will function normally. The liver is a part. It's swappable. That means the signals controlling that organ will function regardless of who made that organ. A functioning liver also requires no conscious thought. Plug in a new one, and you go on about your business and never have to stop to tell that liver what to do. Why is this? Because the vast majority of our bodily functions and processes are automated. They happen without conscious thought. Blood flow, heart rate, waste removal, digestion, these things and more work just fine on their own. Even when you're asleep, or in a coma, for example, the majority of these automated functions keep ticking along nicely. In short, your body doesn't really need you. It works whether whatever makes up you is present or not. You also don't really have to think about walking, or picking up a cup of coffee, or making your fingers click the buy button when you see that new Scott Sigler novel on Amazon. You decide in what direction you want to walk, sure, but then the body takes care of the rest. So, what does all this mean? It means that your body is a lovely machine that works fine without you, but you can take control of it and make it do things if you so choose. And if your brain can control the movement of this machine, why couldn't something else control it? The brain is the software that sends signals to the wiring and hardware that is your body. There's no reason that something else couldn't use that same wiring and hardware just as effectively as your brain does. What if this something could take control of your body, while at the same time disconnecting your ability to do so? This something just takes your hand off the wheel, so to speak. Not kill whatever it is that makes up you, not shut off sensory input, not put you to sleep, just kind of move you from the driver's seat over to the passenger side. You could still see, hear, and taste. You could still feel, but you could control nothing. That's the core idea behind Passenger. Something else controls you, and you're along for the ride. A sentient, self-aware colony of nanomachines might work together to take the reins of your body and work you like a little puppet. A puppet that can move, shoot, and eat. It all comes down to eating, doesn't it? That's the fun of this story. In effect, Passenger is a variation on the zombie tale. A cut or a byte can introduce the vector into your system, where it replicates until it has enough numbers to take you over. Only with the passenger virus, you don't die. You aren't undead. You get to watch everything that your hungry body does. You get to see everything. You get to hear everything. You get to taste everything. The passenger virus factors heavily in my Crypt series. If you haven't consumed those stories, I hope you check them out. Or I hope something takes over your body and makes you check them out. Either way, I get another reader.
You have been listening to The Bones Are White, serialized short story audiobook, written by Scott Sigler. This audiobook was produced by A. Kovacs and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on the author or to hear his free weekly fiction podcast, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Greed by the band Separation of Sanity. Rots you to the core, pumping through your blackened heart. Seduction of your soul, separation of your senses. Sanity, your currency. I am your rolling gun on your knees. Kiss the screen.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.